The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey, it's JD here, and off the top of the show, I just want to make a quick announcement that Podlist is coming back. That's right, Podlist 5, to be exact. And what is a Podlist exactly? Well, it's a podcast playlist. It's a Podlist. Podlist 5 will launch July 8th, 2024, and this is your official call for submissions. I am looking for your pavement or pavement-adjacent songs recorded on a WAV file sent to me via jd@meetingmalkmus.com or WeTransfer, preferably, because the files will be big. MP3s are okay, but WAV files rule the day. I need these files from you by June 15th of 2024 in order to make the cut. So get your files to me on or before June 15th. Get your band together. Pick up an acoustic guitar and just play your balls off for whatever song you choose. It's going to be great. We're going to have a lot of fun, and maybe we'll do something a little bit different this year with the Podlist once it's done. When you send me the file, please send me your band name or your handle, as well as any pertinent information about the band that I need to know to introduce your song. That's what I've got for you. This is your official call for submissions. Again, WAV files on or before June 15th to make Podlist number 5 a reality.
Previously on the Pavement Top 50.
This is the second song from Terra Twilight on the countdown. You Are a Light was number 45.
And here we are at number 41 with Major Leagues.
Pete, what do you think?
So I love this song. I was talking earlier about, you know, the early days of me discovering Pavement and those burned MP3 CDs. And I always loved this song. I mean, this song was the soundtrack to breakups and and heartaches and lonely times.
Hey, this is Westy from the rock and roll band Pavement, and you're listening to The Countdown.
Hey, it's JD here, back for another episode of our Top 50 Countdown for seminal indie rock band Pavement. Week over week, we're going to count down the 50 essential Pavement tracks that you selected with your very own top 20 ballots. I then tabulated the results using an abacus and, strangely, a wizard's hat. All that's left for us is to reveal this week's track. How will your favorite song fare in the ranking? You'll need to tune in, or whatever the podcast equivalent of tuning in is, every week to find out. So there's that. This week, we're joined by Pavement superfan, Cam in Toronto. Cam, how are you doing?
I'm good, JD. How are you? Thank you so much for having me on.
I'm the better part of good. We've had some technical snafus here, and we're working through it. So, yeah, I'll be fine. But enough about me. Let's get into you and find out your Pavement origin story.
Yeah. So my Pavement origin story, I was just saying off mic that I've been on many podcasts over the years, but I've never had a chance to talk about Pavement in long form. So this is quite the treat. My origin story with Pavement goes back to high school. With me, I mean, you can really extrapolate to my kind of like what I'll just call my cool music origin story that I think for me really started in, I'd say, like the fall of 1994, and I always credit Major League Baseball going on strike in 1994, you know, as my sliding doors moment, where maybe I would have never even cared about Pavement if that didn't happen. I guess in that fall, I think I had just entered grade 11, and I was mainly just like a huge sports nerd. So all I wanted to do was watch baseball and fantasy baseball and NBA statistics and trading cards and like real advanced like sports nerddom. And then Major League Baseball went on strike and there's no World Series that year. And I was like heartbroken. I needed something to fill my time. And I don't remember exactly why. It's like I'm going to get really into music, but I started listening to CFNY here in Toronto, where I'm from, or grew up north of the city, and slowly started to get into like a lot of those like gateway bands. So there was all sort of the kind of post grunge crap that was on the radio. They still like yeah. all that stuff. So like, you know, Stone Temple Pilots or, you know, a lot of the CanCon bands of the era that I still love. But, you know, I would also hear some songs by like Dinosaur Jr. or I'd be listening on the All Request show and they play the Pixies or I hear the Breeders. So, you know, little by little, then you get into those bands and then you discover Sonic Youth. And it quickly led me to Pavement, who never had any songs on the radio, but I quickly understood that this is a band you were supposed to like if you were cool. And then it's like Sonic Youth were definitely my first sort of favorite cool band in this post Major League Baseball strike phase. And I still really like them, but I still to this day find them a little atonal. Cause at heart, I still love like top 40 and like pop hooks and stuff. So Pavement were sort of the best version of sort of, you know, poppy hooky songs, but still weird and noisy and
absolutely
kind of like snarky and whatnot. So they sort of ticked a lot of boxes for me. And they clearly those guys like classic rock too, but they also knew about you know, the Swell Maps and the Tall Dwarves and the Clean and the Fall and all those bands that, again, you were supposed to like. And I feel like to some degree I still pretend like I like a lot of bands. Some of them are pretty bad. But yeah, Pavement, I mean, is long time my favorite band. And I've been lucky because I actually got to I've seen them I guess in total 4 times. Wow. I did see them when they played Lollapalooza in Molson Park in Barrie, the sort of the they say in the I'm sure you have the Slow Century DVD, but I remember there's like a clip with yeah. like Scott Canberg said, or Button Astonovich maybe, where he said that was the tour that killed the touring version of Lollapalooza because it was so badly attended, where Sonic Youth headlined and Pavement played 4th. So that was my first time seeing them. I don't think I had any of the albums at that point, because I guess that was the summer like Wowie Zowie came, but I knew sort of some of the songs. And then I feel like by that fall, 1995, I remember having Slant and Jake, because their albums were very expensive too. They were like $20 each, unlike Sonic Youth, who's doing like their DGC reissues where you could get like Daydream Nation for $10, but Crooked Rain right. would be $20. So yeah, I definitely had Crooked Rain first. I remember getting it at Fairview Mall in Toronto on Boxing Day for like 20% wow. off. Yeah, so it was good value. And then I definitely had all the albums by the time I went to university, which was in 1996. So yeah, they were like Pavement, Sonic Youth, Bastard Jr., Pixies, and then some of sort of the more OG alternative bands, you know, The Clash and The Cure. That was sort of the bedrock of sort of my sort of fandom. But yeah, my origin story of Pavement goes way back. So yeah, I saw them twice before they broke up, Lollapalooza, then they played, I've seen them 5 times actually, 3 times before they broke up, and then the 2 reunions. And yeah, they've always been with me. I've never really stopped listening to them. And almost every other band I have phases where like I'll go sometimes, you know, I'll need like a break of a few months or a few years, but no, they've been consistent in my life for God, I don't even know. Go around like 30 years now. Like, that's crazy.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just celebrated the 35th anniversary of Slate Tracks, recording Slate Tracks on January 17th. So that was 35 years ago. And that's when they kicked it off in earnest.
I feel like
that's they didn't really break till 94.
Yeah, is that the one you got the Instagram shout out to the podcast from their
Yeah.
Am I messing up? Yeah. That's huge.
No, you were the one who pointed that out to me. I couldn't figure out why my Instagram was blowing up. And you told me that and I looked at it and then it was like, oh, yeah, Matador reposted it as well or retweeted it as well. So
I'm trying to think because that, like, I had the Westing by Sexton and Musket that sort of collected all those like really early gnarly stuff, which was great. I don't know if those ever came out individually on CDs or if they did, like they were real collector's items and like the Drag City stuff. From whatever it calls, I never had the actual CDs. Okay.
Yeah, they were just on vinyl. I've got them hanging on my wall because I didn't have a turntable. I went out and collected them, and there they are.
Very
Demolition
good.
Plot, yeah. Perfect Sound Forever, and
chaotic artwork that goes with all the tape and albums.
Very haphazard and like you said, like gnarly sounds, and I prefer the more hooky melodic stuff as well. So tell me about the other couple times you saw them live before we carry.
So first time would have been 1995 Lollapalooza playing alongside Sonic Youth and Hole and Cypress Hill. They played in the afternoon. I remember this show because Sinead O'Connor, REP, or shout out to Ridley Funeral Home, as our friend Toronto Mike would say, was supposed to play, but she was like pregnant, so Elastica subbed for her. So that they played in the afternoon. I remember seeing a mosh pit. Like, I didn't go down to the front of Molson Park, but it just sort of weird in hindsight because they were touring Wowie Zowie. Not really the most moshable tunes on that one. I almost think of it as like it's half country music, but they were Papen playing right between Elastica, who are probably never more popular in North America, so right after Elastica and right before Cypress Hill, who are real crowd pleasers with the oversized Buddha on stage and like smoke billowing. So I think, you know, Papen were definitely set up to fail, and again, this was, I think, referenced in the Slow Century DVD. So that was the first time. Second time I saw them at the Phoenix Concert Theater.
You saw them at
Toronto.
The Phoenix?
Yeah. Yeah. So that was the Bright in the Corners tour. That was a fun show.
I bet.
Yeah. So I obviously played most of Bright in the Corners and whatever else. And I remember they did an interview with the new music with Sookie and Lee on that tour. I think it was Malkmus and Steve West, I want to say. And Malkmus is, they were in a used car dealership for some reason. I don't know if there was one close to the venue. And Malkmus had like very short hair at the time, I remember, because I had this on VHS cassette. I watched it many times. But that was a good show. I remember being in a parking lot before and drinking bottles of Samuel Adams beer and not having a bottle opener. So we weren't cool enough to do that sort of like pop top thing where you take like two bottles. So we're trying to use the curb and like one of the bottles, the neck of the bottle broke. We were so poor, we still drank it, which is probably not a good idea. So that was one of my memories of that
show. Do not drink from a broken bottle.
Yeah, don't do that. It's a good way to sort of shred your esophagus or whatever. But anyway, live to tell. But yeah, that was a good show. And then the third time I saw them at the Government, no longer those cracked beside the Cool House in Toronto. That was
funeral home.
Yeah, exactly. That was the Terror Twilight tour. That one was less remarkable. I mean, I think there were already the rumors they were breaking up, and they seemed like they were kind of mailing it in at that point and seemed fairly disinterested. And definitely Terror Twilight, still a good album, but of the five full lengths, easily my least favorite, I would say. So yeah, that was the fourth time was the reunion tour when it hit Toronto. They played on the island. Which is very cool. Toronto Island, for your non-Toronto listeners, is like, think of it like Central Park, but in a Great Lake, I guess. So they played there like a package show with the Broken Social Scene. Who else? Band of Horses played Beach House and somebody else. I want to say Destroyer.
Wow.
What a something. Lineup. Yeah, so that was cool. So while
I missed cool that, I was living in LA at the time. Okay. I missed that.
Did
tour.
You see? Did you see but their first reunion tour? Did you see them? How many times?
Yeah,
have
I saw
you
them
seen
in Central Park.
The Central Park. Okay.
Well, the first time I saw them was in 2010 when they reunited. Like I didn't become a fan until Terror Twilight, so I was like really late to the party. Really late to the party. And that's then saw them in Central Park. And then on the most recent reunion tour, I went to the UK and followed them and like went to like 8 shows in the UK and went to Portugal and saw them in Porto and saw them both shows in Toronto and then saw them in LA at the Fonda. So I don't know.
Where in Porto did they play? I've been there before. It's like, what type of venue were they at?
It was a big festival. It was the Primavera Festival. So it was like, I don't know it well enough to tell you where it was, but it was like, it was a big festival ground.
Gotcha.
I'm sure they do other events there because it was a really cool space and it was a good, Beck was on right before they went on and he was electric and, they were great. Yeah.
Very, very cool. Yeah. Did you drink a port while you were in Porto?
I did not. I'm not a port guy.
Not a port. Yeah.
But I did have the sardines, big plate of sardines.
Absolutely. Yeah. Portugal's fun. I've only been there once, but I had a great time. I saw them on the most recent reunion tour. So the fifth of 5 times at Massey Hall in Toronto, the first night. That's very cool. You got to follow them around because I know they were very conscious about mixing up the set lists.
Yeah.
Each
it was
night,
not boring
at all. Which is very cool. So that, and then Malkmus solo, maybe 4 times, mainly at Lee's Palace, in Toronto. And then I did see Scott Canenberg live when he toured solo. He played the Horseshoe. He's played solo a few times in Toronto because I know he played the Dakota Tavern. That's very, very small. And I believe he played here when he was doing the Preston School of Industry.
Oh, wow. I would have loved to see that.
I saw Canenberg. I feel like it was right before COVID. He played with some guys and did a combination of his solo stuff and some Pavement Soons. I know he played like Kennel District and a few other jams. And then I also feel like one of the times I saw Sonic Youth was when Mark Eibold was in the band. I seem to remember seeing him during that iteration. Yeah, like that was around like the album Rather Ripped or something.
Okay.
From what I recall. So I feel like I saw that. I've had the good fortune to see like Pavement or Pavement guys.
Adjacent bands.
Pavement and Jace. Probably into the double digits. I feel very fortunate and then, you know, Pavement proper 5 different times, which is I think there was only one Toronto show I didn't see. They played at the place that's no longer around called the Palladium.
Where was the Palladium?
Palladium was like near Main and Danforth. I feel like it's a shelter now, but it was a big for a few years. And I remember, I feel like on my blog, I did like a infographic of all the bands who played the Palladium. It was quite the array. Everyone from Pavement to My Bloody Valentine played there.
Oh,
there was like
man.
A hip hop double bill with like Tribe Called Quest and De La Soul when they did sort of the Native Tongues package tour. I feel like the Lemonheads might have played there. It was kind of right before I got into music, and those shows probably would have been 19 plus, so I wouldn't have been of age. But yeah, I'm pretty sure that was the only other time Pavement played Toronto, and that would have been the Crooked Rain tour.
That's great.
Yeah. So yeah, in terms of like Pavement live, and then I'm trying to think of any other like anecdotes with them beyond just like buying all their stuff.
they've got a lot.
Yeah.
They're coming out with a 7-inch box set this year.
Yeah, I'm curious how long they'll keep this going, this reunion, because I believe because they do have like other shows coming. Do we say when we're recording this? I feel like this is sort of evergreen content, so we probably shouldn't put it in time and place. But you know, we're in the early days of 2024, and I know they have shows coming up. I think in South America. and elsewhere. Yeah. So I will be curious to see how long they keep this going, this reunion tour, because I never got the vibe Malkmus was that into things like reunions, but I don't know. This one's gone longer than I anticipated, and they're certainly hitting a lot of countries.
Me too. Let me ask you this. Did you notice a big difference between the first reunion and the second reunion? Like in terms of Malkmus's, I don't know, his sort of behavior, his attitude, I guess?
I think he seemed a bit more at peace with it the second time in perhaps in good spirits. Maybe I just caught him on a good night. Because I think he was always very... indifferent wouldn't be the word, but I feel like, and from what I understood, the other guys in the band were more into the idea of a reunion than he was. Because he's obviously, as a solo artist, he's been quite prolific.
Oh my God.
You know, I think there's more Malkmus, and well, there's definitely more Malkmus or Malkmus plus Jix albums than Pavement by a long shot now.
Big time.
And he's been very consistent putting out. But yeah, he seemed in good spirits, and I don't know. It's interesting because when I saw them at Massey Hall and just seeing the crowd that was there, and they did two nights at Massey Hall in Toronto, I'm trying to think of it. I think feel like it holds 3,000 people. So that's like 6,000 people.
Yeah.
It almost felt more like they had bridged over into classic rock somehow. which I don't know if it's like a discovery thing because of Spotify where... It'd be interesting. I always like comparing, you know, look at Pavement on Spotify and then go to that tab where it said people who like this band also like these bands and how that morphs over the years. And then you have kind of the curiosity, and there's a few bands of the Pavement ilk that have a situation like this where Harness Your Hopes becomes this like weird viral era sensation, which it's a fine B-side, but I never gave it too much thought. And I'm not sure I really need to hear it live, but again, here we are, and I think that's their number one stream song on Spotify. I know Dinosaur Jr. had a track like that that for some reason became a big viral hit in Japan from the Without a Sound album. So again, strange times we're living in this stream age.
Absolutely.
Here. I feel like Pavement's done pretty well at sort of crossing over into sort of the youth as much as any band of that era, considering those guys I think are all close to 60, if not older.
Yeah.
At this point.
I've got a 12-year-old and a 14-year-old, and they both know Harness Your Hopes. Like beyond osmosis, like from me, they know that song from TikTok, and it's so bonkers to me.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I just while we were working through our technical difficulties, I noticed Mary Weiss, the lead singer of the Shangri-Las, just passed away.
Oh,
shout out. Yeah, which is a shame, but it's like there's a whole generation of kids who will not know and probably won't care that this person sang probably their favorite TikTok hook that oh no that you've heard on a million rap songs, a million TikTok videos, sung by Mary Weiss, lead singer of the Shangri-Las. They will not know, they will not care. It's a time we live in. I feel like people's relationship with music is just so... it's just different. I don't think it's good or bad, or I don't know. As much as anyone is nostalgic in the good old days, but it's also like things change all the time.
Yeah.
So Harness Your Hopes, TikTok hit, sure. Why not?
Why not?
It's like totally believable. I don't know.
It's a Pavement anomaly. So speaking of relationships with music, what's your go-to record? I understand from your conversation that Terror Twilight is like number five with a bullet. What's your number one? What's your one you'll pick up on a day like today, and you might just want to listen to some music, so you throw it on?
Yeah, I mean, probably depending on what mood you catch me, I would say Wowie Zowie more often than not. But the actual answer, honestly, is probably Crooked Rain. I feel like it's just... because again, I feel like I'm sort of a top 40 person at heart, as much as I pretend not to be, although I sort of love it all. And I feel like that's sort of their closest to like doing a CCR record famously.
Yes.
And that's not an original thought. Like, I feel like that, you know, that was sort of a reference point that a lot of rock critics mentioned back, you know, What if you cross the fall?
Shout out Ridley Funeral Home.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, in terms of like something to listen through, you know, 1 through 12, Crooked Rain for sure. But Wowie Dowie is just such a peculiar record, and probably had, I'd say, either like Grounded or Father Dear Sister of Thought or amongst my like favorite songs. They're just so unique.
The Father to a Sister of Thought is amazing.
Yeah. I feel like the only problem with that album, it's a little long and there's a few tracks, mainly like Flux Equals Rad, that I would just like skip over. They're like fairly annoying.
Somewhere out like, there is a Spiral Stairs curated version of Wowie Zowie. Like, he had a track listing. That's the only record he didn't get to do the track listing. But he had it as a 10 song album, classic rock album is what he called it.
Interesting. Yeah. Cause it's I feel like it's 16 tracks, like the original
16
version.
Or 18. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. It is 18. But you know, it's got country music. It's got like stuff that's sort of resembling krautrock. It's got sort of just like throwaway dirges, like the aforementioned Flux Equals Rad. You know, starts with a song, We Dance, that's just like a really slow tempo song and a very atypical album opener. You know, Rattled by the Rush was the first single, which I mainly recall. I feel like Pavement songs don't like, or Pavement fans don't like that song generally, and famously was featured on Beavis and Butthead, where they said the band was just lazy.
Try harder.
Exactly. And weirdly had like two videos too, from what I recall.
Oh.
There was sort of the main video and then one where it's just like a bathtub filling with water with the other video like playing on a tile.
That's right. Yeah. That's the one I'm familiar with. Yeah.
I'm not really sure what that's all about. But yeah, that album was all over the place. But it was just like a wild album that the cover art is great. You know, you mentioned like a wizard hat off the top. It had like the wizard on the back saying Pavin is rad.
Yes.
Yeah. Some, I remember like the liner notes were like all scribbly, and I feel like it had some like quite some probably as like Pavin working as blue as they ever did in some of the liner notes with some of the
absolutely.
Things.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I don't want to repeat because I don't know who would clip the sound, but some like rudeness in there. but yeah, what an album. And again, I definitely remember getting that album in high school before I really had sort of the broader context of this whole indie rock thing and just being like, what is this?
It's very different from anything that was going on at the time, for sure.
Yeah, totally. And around the same time too, like I also got at least one of the Silver Jews albums.
Ah.
Like really early, because again, I knew that Nastanovich and Malkmus were on at not American Water, the Twilight Walker, I think was the name of the album.
Starlight Walker,
right.
Yeah.
Which was like great and like, you know, was not a huge stretch if you're into Pavement, and certainly if you're into Wowie Zowie, getting into that album was fairly easy. And that's sort of a regret too. I was supposed to go see the Purple
Mountains
with like David Berman, was obviously canceled when he decided to check out a couple of years ago. And I'd say that's probably my number one concert regret, the one and only time the Silver Jews played in Toronto. I think it was like 2009. I forgot which album, the Lookout Sea, Lookout.
Lookout Mountain, Lookout Sea, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like maybe that album. I should have gone. I don't know. I feel like it was just like in a gap in my Silver Jews listening, and now that Mr. Berman's not with us.
There's clips of it on YouTube. So yeah, I've enjoyed those. Yeah.
Yeah, well, tragic. What a talent.
Oh man. Yeah, absolutely. Love him. And if you're listening to this and you enjoy this, maybe you'll enjoy the Berman Project, which is another podcast I do. So if you're out there listening,
I didn't even know.
Check out the Berman Project. Go. Yeah.
Freaking a plug. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. Well, to appeal to your top 40 sensibility, we have you kicking off the top 40. This is track number 40 coming up. Should we go to it?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, we'll take a quick break and we'll be right back after this with track number 40.
Hey, this is Bob Nastanovich from Pavement. Thanks for listening. And now on with a countdown.
40.
I heard what you said. The leaders are dead. They're robbing the sky.
So, track number 40, Starlings of the Slipstream, is the 11th track on BTC and the fourth song on the countdown from Bright in the Corner so far, behind Blue Hawaiian at 50, number 44, Embassy Row, and of course at 43, which we just heard a couple weeks ago, was Old to Begin. So, Cam from Toronto, what do you think of Starlings of the Slipstream?
This is a great little song. I love this song just as a standalone item. I love this song going right into the song Finn to wrap up that album.
Yeah.
But those might actually be my two favorite songs on Bright in the Corners. Like what a great 1-2 punch to close things out. Finn is probably actually my favorite song on that album.
Really good.
Yeah, I think Starlings in the Slipstream is a great song. It's a great Pavement song, but I do also feel like it would not be out of place on that first Stephen Malkmus solo album. I think it's a good harbinger of things to come because it's really well produced, it's really well played. And it kind of has that same like languid, breezy, almost like California. It's not really a California song, but I don't know. I could just sort of hear it on that first Malkmus solo album alongside like the latter half of that album with like Trojan Curfew and Detto and those sort of more, you know, mid-tempo songs. It's a great little song. It's really short though. Like how long is it? It's like 2 minutes or so.
Yeah. Two,
I don't have it in front of me, but like I want to say 220 or something like that. It's a short song with sparse verses. You know, it's I love the tone of SM's voice in this song. Like he's using a really nice version of his voice. Like it really is a lovely song.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of his best songs, and again, this is not an original thought, but just sounds so effortless.
Yes.
And just even some of the lyrics in this song, like, you know, I'm sure he wrote them on the back of a napkin, and they're even like, you know, the 10th best verse in this is probably more creative than anything I've ever done in my entire life. Like I think of that, Darlings on the Split Screen, and so yes. Like just that little wordplay in there. And I know you mentioned this when you talked about the song before, but you know, in terms of like, I sort of jokingly alluded to the liner notes of Wowie Zowie Not, you know, things that haven't aged well. Darlings on the Split Screen. I think when you talked about this song before on the podcast, you sort of referenced Revenge of the Nerds.
That's what it reminds me of.
Yeah, or like Porky's. I feel like there's like a spy cam in a sorority. But just, yeah, what a just like lyricist. But that whole album I find interesting because I don't find it like a very high energy album. But
no,
it does feel like a very late 90s album, like bridging this, you know, functionally the grunge era was dead, but we weren't into kind of the 2000s with like the Strokes and Interpol and those bands. So I find albums of this era from like indie rock or a lot of British stuff, you know, I think of like Spiritualize or The Verve, Urban Hymns, are really interesting because it was a bit of a no man's or a no person's land, I feel like, if you were into indie rock and alternative in that time, because we're also like right on the precipice of like the boy band Britney Spears era, and also like the new metal era.
Yeah.
So yeah. An album like Right in the Corners comes out in 1997. You know, I feel like a lot of alternative bands of the era were sort of having an identity crisis. That album, I think of it in the same terms when I think of that Blur self-titled album. Where Damon Albarn was and Graham Coxon especially were saying how influenced they were by Pavement.
Right. That's the one with song two on it, right?
That's right. Yeah. And like Beetlebum and stuff.
Right. Right.
It's a really interesting time in music, but I don't know. Like, I feel like Bright in the Corners, I didn't think about for years, but the longer I sit with this band, it's like, that's like really a kick-ass album, and even like the singles were great. It's definitely like a more refined Pavement, and you know, I think it's a superior album to Terror Twilight, but just like smoothed out every rough edge that came with Wowie Zowie. It's almost weird in hindsight that, you know, a song like Shady Lane wasn't a big radio hit. I mean, it's not a difficult song to get into.
Agree.
At all, but there's, you know, there's tons of great songs and also some good B-sides of that era, including I think this is where Harness Your Hopes was. I think that was a Carrot Rope B-side, or
it is. Oh shit!
Or was it like a Shady Lane B-side? I forget. It was definitely one of these albums.
I could look it up, but you know, I am uncool and underqualified, and I often just wing it. But that one I do not know. I do not know the answer. If you're listening to this and you're screaming at your device right now, send me an email, jd@meetingmalchemist.com, and let me know where Harness Your Hopes comes from. It's definitely an EP. Yeah, and I want to say it's Major Leagues, but I might be wrong.
Yes. So. Oh, I think you might be right. I feel like it actually is a Terror Twilight era B-side. Yeah, Sir Starlings of Strip Team, you know, it's a great song. I don't know. I definitely feel like it's an overlooked song in their catalog for sure.
As far as Malcolmist lyrics go as well, like I think that first verse is narratively cohesive, right? Like, so I've done some further research than I did for the prior episode, and I learned what a slipstream actually is. And it is like, I've got it written down here. A slipstream is the area behind a jet or any moving object. So it's like how race cars can do drifting and things like that.
Okay.
The slipstream will often catch birds and suck them toward the plane in the engines. And so the starlings of the slipstream, I heard what you said, the leaders are dead, they're robbing the skies, and I can hear their followers cry. So to me, that's like fairly straightforward as far as Malcolmus goes, because he's usually word salad, right? Like it's
absolutely
beautiful the way he does it, but it's like you said, it's effortless.
What do we know about actual starlings? Are they like a migratory bird? Are they getting like sucked up in the slipstream en masse? Because they're pretty big for like a I don't know if they qualify as like a songbird, but they're bigger than like a sparrow for sure.
That's right. Yeah,
they're kind of like a grackle size.
I did not realize I had starling. A bird expert.
Yeah, no, I was pretty well, again, before baseball and before indie rock, I was like really into animals as a kid, and it's I have a lot of latent knowledge of like birds and amphibians and mammals and whatnot.
That's great.
So, yeah. Also, I don't know if you're from Canada originally. There was I shouldn't say failed. There was just like a CanCon band called Starling.
I don't remember them.
From the late 90s, early 2000s. I want to say they were from Ottawa. And I feel like they got sort of a major label push for like one album. I remember seeing them in the cutout bins in and around Toronto. Not long after Bright in the Corners came out, Starling was getting a bit of a push.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very
cool.
That's
a fun fact. Yeah.
Fun fact. You can't help but drop the lexicon in.
I know.
If you're listening to this and you wonder where a lot of this language is coming from, shout out Ridley Funeral Home and fun fact, there's a particular episode you should listen to of Toronto Mic'd, and it is an episode all about lexicon, and Cam is on it, and the VP of sales is on it, Tyler, and of course Mike is on it, and it's a great addendum to the podcast. Well,
as I mentioned, I've been on the Toronto Mic podcast many, many times over the years, and Pavement does come up every once in a while, but Mike's knowledge of Pavement is just, he heard Cut Your Hair. The radio a few times. And even that, I don't know, like, I feel like in Canada, that did not really get spins. The only time I recall hearing it on the radio was kind of the Club 102 nights. It would get played in the opening hour when you might hear some more
eclectic stuff,
obscure acts. Hearing Cut Your Hair and some like the band Adorable, like almost like the third tier British stuff, the New Fast Automatic Daffodils or whatever that band, the New Fads,
right?
Adorable, Homeboy, maybe a little Ned's Atomic Dustbin or the Boo Radleys. Every once in a while you hear a Pavement or a Pixies track, but not really dance music.
No.
Cut Your Hair, I don't think. And certainly Starlings of the Slipstream, definitely not.
No.
dance music at all. So was this album always your favorite?
No.
Sounds like Terror Twilight was your entry point. Yeah.
And that was my entry point. And then the Steve solo record. And then I went and completed the catalog. First one I got was Crooked Rain and fell in love with Crooked Rain. And then I just bought everything. And just through listening, that was part of the Meeting Malcolmus idea. The concept behind it was me listening to every track so that I could, you know, get a better sense of why they were so awesome. And like, why was it that I liked them? I couldn't ever really put my finger on it. So I thought, well, I'll just go through every track and see.
Very cool.
And that's what I did. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Like I don't know if you talked about his first solo album much, but I fucking love that album. I think
it is
really underrated. Yeah.
Yes.
To me, it feels like a person reborn where, you know, there's the old adage, if you're a band, you know, you have your whole life to write your first album and you have 6 months to write your second album or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I just felt like all those songs Malcolmus had been sitting on for years, I could be wrong. Like you're the expert, so maybe you know this for a fact, but I feel like those songs you've probably sitting on for quite a while, but they just, for whatever reason, they didn't feel like Pavement songs. Cause they just seem so fully formed and both familiar yet a new thing when it came out.
Totally.
Even that album cover is like, what is he doing? He's on the beach. He looks all breezy. His hair is different. He almost looked like a sort of a matinee idol. He's never been more sort of dashing than he is on that album cover. But it's great. I'm trying to remember, when did that come out? Was it 2003?
2001.
Is it 2000? Wow. Okay. Wild.
Is it 2001 or? Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. It wasn't 4 years between that and Terror Twilight, certainly. So yeah, I think you're right.
And on the Terror Twilight box set, there's a couple SM demos that, like, he was demoing for Pavement, but like you said, must have just been like, this doesn't feel right, and sat on them. And then they show up, you know, 2 years later, 3 years later on the record.
Yeah. Well, it was interesting to see when he started bridging out, even, you know, in the last few years of Pavement during their first iteration. I remember having the soundtrack to the movie Suburbia, the Richard Linklater movie, where the first song was Elastica featuring Stephen Malkmus doing a cover of the X song, The Unheard Music. Have you ever heard this song?
No, I'm not.
Yeah, that's worth digging up. It's not. I definitely know it's not on Spotify. That's one of the great. I wouldn't say it's like a lost soundtrack. I think people know about that soundtrack, but that's a really cool cover, in my opinion. And I don't know if you get with Elastica much. Right? The second time we're talking about Elastica, weirdly, like maybe they probably met on the Lollapalooza tour.
Well, he was dating the singer of Elastica for a while, or something along those lines. There was
intrigue. Was dating Justine Frischman for a minute. Did Malkmus date her too? Is that true?
I think there was some sort of dalliance at some point. Yeah.
Okay. I don't know. We might need to get Robert Lawson in. I'm not sure about that. But regardless, maybe it's on YouTube, but that's definitely worth digging up. And in terms of an early Malkmus external foray outside of Pavement, that I think is a very cool song that we don't hear anymore. That album, or that soundtrack, also has the first version. I think it was before A Thousand Leaves came out, the song Sunday by Sonic Youth. That was the first time it appeared, was on that. And Beck's on there, and Superchunk, and I believe the Bipolar Surfer. Some previous, I think it's all like previously released stuff mainly. That was a combination of like B-sides and other stuff. But definitely worth digging up, because I don't think that album
for
intact
sure
is on Spotify. But that cover is great, and I feel like it's weirdly been lost to history, because I don't consider either Stephen Malkmus nor Elastica particularly obscure in this day and age, but that song's just fallen through the cracks, as it were.
Oh man. Well, Cam, it has been absolutely wonderful picking your brain here about Pavement and music in general. You've got a real great knowledge of things, and you're right in my wheelhouse age-wise as well. I'm going to be 50 this year, but very similar vibe. So I get, you know, a lot of what you're putting down. Is there anywhere that you live in the online realm that you want to share with people, or is there any projects you're working on that you want to share or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, people can follow or take a look at my music blog, completelyignored.com. I used to call it sort of think Nate Silver, but for music is how I describe it. But now I feel like Nate Silver is like half canceled, so I'm going to need a new analogy for this. But think of it like fun musical infographics crossed, maybe like Moneyball crossed with indie rock.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah, it's all about sort of using numbers and graphics and visuals to tell little fun facts and anecdotes about music. A lot of stuff about like things like ticket prices and like stream counts on Spotify and fake posters. Like there's a lot of like fake Coachella posters on there of like, you know, CanFoncello was probably my biggest viral hit from that blog. Whereas
that was you?
Coachella. Yeah, that was me.
Oh, that's fabulous.
Yeah, Yeah, so that was a big hit with the Alan Cross and sort of the Indie 88 crowd.
Yeah.
But again, it was a bit of a one-hit wonder, much like Cut Your Hair with Pavement. It's been a few viral hits from the blog. But yeah, completelyignored.com if you want to check it out. There's all sorts of stuff on there that probably if you're listening to this, so you wouldn't be totally offended by what's on there. There's some fun stuff.
Cool. Well, I'm going to check it out right after this.
Cool.
Thanks again for coming in, and thanks for putting up with my technical difficulties. That was great. That's what I've got for you this week, everybody. Next week, we'll be here with track number 39, and we'll do this all again. Thanks, Cam.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Wash your goddamn hands.
Thanks for listening to Meeting Malcolmus, a Pavement podcast, where we count down the top 50 Pavement tracks as selected by you. If you've got questions or concerns, please shoot me an email, jd@meetingmalcolmus.com.
Duvra! Podcasts and such.